Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, no! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. JJ Devaney, who is now in the driving seat and down the line on vacation, phoning it in as usual, Andrew Gundling. How are you, my man?
I feel very uncomfortable with all of this. Not being able to start by yelling and getting into my groove. It's just, I don't know, I feel just very off right now.
Yeah, and I mix things up by going, oh no, because this is going to throw people. And this is why I hate these podcasts, because your lack of commitment to this podcast means that you're not here, we can't bounce off each other, the rapport is broken, it just feels weird. And also, I'm in control, which is deadly dangerous.
I love that you say that every year when this happens, my lack of commitment to this podcast. You know, my family is upstairs right now. I'm in the basement here, and we're in Cape Cod. I'm in the basement of this house, this Airbnb that we rented. They're all about to go to the beach, and I'm doing the podcast. And don't get me wrong, I love it, and this is what I want to be doing. It's by my own choice, but how dare you suggest that I'm not showing any commitment to the podcast while on vacation and sitting here doing work while everyone else is upstairs having a vacation?
That is actually true. That's unfair. You've taken time out of a vacation morning as well. We're recording early. We rarely do this.
Yeah.
And to be fair, look, you and I both know that this podcast will be...
Whoa, it's crap.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, it's bloody rubbish. Rubbish.
No question about it. By the way, speaking of my vacation, I want to ask you a question, because last night, I think I experienced the most American night of my life.
Okay, go
ahead. And I'm curious what yours would be. What we did here in Cape Cod, there's this Cape Cod Baseball League, which was kind of made famous by the movie Summer Catch. I don't know if you've ever seen that with
No.
Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jessica Biel. But at any rate, so we went to a game, and it was just like the most Norman Rockwell Americana scenes that you've just ever seen in your life. It was free. It's this like mini baseball stadium kind of carved out of like a patch in the woods here in this town that we're staying in. And it's just like, it was packed with people, but like there's no beer, so it's really wholesome. And it's just like people eating hot dogs. Kids are playing catch off to the side. When the bleachers fill up, people just bring lawn chairs. It was, you know, I got Jack there sitting on my lap watching his first baseball game. It was just, you know, it was just like the most typical American moment that I think I've ever actually experienced in my entire life. I'm curious what yours is.
That sounds like something absolutely out of a movie. That is incredible. I don't know. I mean, just off the top of my head, I would think watching the sun go down on Santa Monica Beach, that I remember doing that in 2008, and that really kind of struck me as, wow, I'm here, the Pacific is lapping in, you know, the sun is setting out at sea, and it was very, very beautiful. There was a warm breeze, and that felt very American in a different kind of way. But oh no, that's incredible.
It was beautiful.
Speaking of experiences, I was at Manchester City training this week, and that was an experience. And I can tell you, Andrew, I have a 100% pass completion rate to Pep Guardiola now.
Yeah, I saw your annoying tweet.
What do you mean? Like, don't you see?
What was it that said, like, yeah, just passed it to Pep Guardiola, no big deal. Like,
No. I said, get over it.
Oh, yeah, even more annoying.
Yeah, I'll tell you, so basically Manchester City, they had this kind of joint training session. So the media were invited. It was an open session in Rockland County, Orangeburg, which is the new facility for NYCFC. And, you know, I'm going in the gates and I'm seeing, you know, their Manchester City sign, and I'm seeing the NYCFC sign, and I'm seeing the Melbourne, you know, all their affiliates have their crests, and I'm like, oh, I am literally entering the Death Star here. This is everything that I hate about football. And I get in there, and it's amazing how quickly the fan in me takes over. I was watching, you know, NYCFC training was fine. It was, you know, it was lively. It was interesting possession-based session. And then Pep comes out to watch the last 10 minutes of it with Mikel Arteta. And all of a sudden I start shaking. This is incredible. And, you know, you're right off to the side of the grass, and there's a soccer ball that remains there within touching distance from the NYCFC training. And I had this overwhelming urge to just smash it across the field. It's just the child in me. I don't think it'll ever change. And all of a sudden, Pep kind of makes a beeline to the center of the field adjacent. And I'm like, this is my chance. This is my chance. Pick him out with a nice curling pass. Your life could change. Your life could change. Yeah. He could go, hey, I haven't seen anyone whip a pass to me like that since I played for Barcelona. Let's sign this kid. He's got moxie. He's got something about
him. Kid!
I know. You look, it's all part of reverting to the boy in me. And
I mean, what are you, 47?
Oh, you are so... Will you stop, 47? By the way, I moisturize every day, so when I am 47, I will still look 27. But I ping the ball out to him, and he just controls it, flicks it up to himself, and it was just this wonderful feeling, a crazy feeling. But yeah, so I watched their training session. I have a couple
of... not to cut you off, but I was kind of hoping, like, you went for a very, like... That was very conservative, what you did. Just, you know, hey, kid, like Mean Joe Green was asking you for a Coke or something, like pass me the ball. I was kind of hoping you'd go more with like something a little flashy, like the Milad Mohammadi Iranian throw-in, like something like that to like really like
no, but
get eyeball.
But don't forget that the sprinklers had been on and it had been raining all morning. So the chance of hilarity, of a hilarious moment where I just fall over was huge. So I had to get this right. And also, Pep didn't initiate. He didn't like point and look for the pass. I just pinged the ball at him. And his awareness, obviously, from being the center midfielder that he was, he saw the ball coming and controlled it. But Manchester City training was good. It was a mix of players you know fairly well, like Leroy Sané and Riyad Mahrez was there, and then there's Jason Denier, who you don't know so well, Zinchenko, Phil Foden was there. Actually got to play a crossbar challenge with Phil Foden afterwards. That's
really
that is one of the weirdest things. Okay, so Phil Foden is a kid, but because you're in the mindset of he's being paid, he's a professional, you forget that deep within him, he probably has more resources of joy left in him. He is not the grizzled pro yet. He's just an 18, 19-year-old kid who wants to play. Andrew, it was so funny afterwards. All the senior team have gone. They've literally all trooped onto the bus. Joe Hart, Denier, like I said, Leroy Sané had left, and they're all on their way back to wherever hotel they're staying in. Foden won't come inside. He's clipping the ball around with a couple of my friends from Copa 90 and myself. He tried to nutmeg me, and I was in jeans and runners. That could have been just absolutely embarrassing. But so he's out there, and then you hear this Manchester accent. Phil, come on now. Come on, Phil. We got to go. Come on, you've got gym session. And he's just like, it's like his mother is calling him home from the park.
Yeah.
It's just so natural and not really what I expected. And, I said to the guy, he's still got a gym session. Yeah, yeah, we've got to get a gym session in. And it's just like he just wants to kick around and he wants to have fun. I also met, Brian Kidd, the former number two to Fergie, who was just a really nice man. He's one of Pep's assistant at Manchester City. And just to think this guy, when he was 18, played in a European Cup final, that kind of blew me away. So, they're still in the ancillary staff around Pep Guardiola. There's still a good Manchester feel, which was nice. But there is kind of more often than not, you hear the Spanish accent on the training field. So it's kind of, it's a weird mix of this club that's, you know, grounded in Manchester and the city. And then also very much the modern, like I said, Death Star taking over all of football. That it is. So it was an interesting day. Thanks to Manchester City for having us, and very, very, very good insight into Pep's methods as well. And you could see, even, you know, in an open session, Andrew, they're not going to give away any secrets. They're not going to do anything that's going to be able to be thrown back at them. You know, they didn't do any set piece formations or anything like that, but they did a passage of play that was just so Pep Guardiola. I was like, you know, they really do practice what they preach. Is such a specific style of football. By the way, I asked Pep Guardiola if I could sign a short-term contract. You want to hear his response?
Mm-hmm. No way.
He was very firm.
Sounds about right.
He was very firm. I said, Pep, listen, just sign me. You've seen what I can do. I've got a great range of passing between 20 and 40 yards. Pep, will you sign me?
No way.
Wasn't having it.
That's sad. You know, I am curious, though, about, like, to maybe talk about Manchester City for a moment. We didn't really discuss. It kind of happened during, like, the black hole that was the World Cup in terms of our interests. So we didn't talk much about Riyad Mahrez going there, because that is, like, that's a massive move. This is a thing that's been rumored for basically the last 2 years. Mahrez not necessarily going to Manchester City, but just him leaving Leicester City. Now it's finally happened and he goes to the champions. I'm so curious as to how he's going to be used there, because, you know,
I respect Man City's
desire for progress. Like, you can't get static. You can't rest on your laurels, even coming off of a historic season that they're coming off of. But where does he fit in?
I asked myself the exact same thing. I had a chat with Mark Ogden, which we'll get to later, who he kind of gave us a scorecard on where the teams have done in terms of the transfer window. But I don't know where he's going to start. And are they looking to move one of the elder statesmen on? But it's such a position of strength for them. Bernardo Silva, David Silva, Sterling. Sané. I don't know where he starts. I don't know how he fits in. It's going to be fascinating to see how that works out. I'm with you on this. It's a great move and a move that he wanted. It's such a, you know, I know Leicester, he was a Premier League champion at Leicester City, but it is still such a big move up for him. There's regular Champions League football and all that comes with that. But honestly, right now, as we sit here, Andrew, with what, 2 weeks to the start of the season, I don't see him starting.
Yeah, me neither. Now, these things always have an interesting way of shaking themselves out. Someone goes, you know, someone's form takes a dip. Somebody's always going to get injured. It's just like, I'm sure that there will be minutes for him, but you're right. As it stands now with a healthy squad, I don't see it either. And that's not necessarily to say that he made the wrong move. Like, I don't know that he should. He is, I hate to say this, but he kind of is too talented. He should be playing regular Champions League football. I like seeing him want to test himself at a club with more ambition.
I just think it might be a talent and a numbers game. Like, he's in his mid-20s now. He needs to be playing full-time somewhere. He's I won't say came from nowhere, but pretty much into the Premier League, had made this amazing impact. And now I feel as if this is a step forward. Sure, 100%. But also, by the same token, is it a step towards the bench? I don't know. Moving on to...
Real quick, though, before we get off of that, one thing that I do love about the whole everything you just said there with, like, your experience at Manchester City, I feel like these are the moments that remind people who listen to this podcast that we are not journalists.
No, but...
You know what I mean?
No, we are podcasters, we are broadcasters, but we are not journalists in the strictest sense. And...
Right, we are literally fans that somehow have fallen backwards into microphones being placed in front of our faces.
Well, why do you say it like that? Why do you have to diminish? We have some talent. We have some ability. But you're right. We are fans. I don't want to change that about me. The minute you don't care about it, the minute it doesn't mean something to you, you should get out and do something else. So I'm quite happy.
No, because I'm saying I think it's great that, like, you went to Manchester City's training session and have this, like, glean in your eye that you're so giddy about it. Like, a regular journalist would just be like, oh, they'd find a reason to complain.
Right.
Had to go all the way up to Orangeburg. Oh, they didn't even show us anything. It was, you know, like, I love that, you know,
they literally,
you're a fan and this was like one of the highlights of your life.
They literally made two players available and they weren't even really available to me because ESPN TV had first dibs on them. So it wasn't as if they were going to give ESPN podcasting or audio any special preference or treatment. So yeah, it was a long trip up there. It's awkward to get to, but I'll tell you, the cynicism just washes away when you experience, I suppose, what you always dreamt about. Now can I move on? I'm driving this, by the way. I'm in charge.
I know, but I was curious if Manchester City had maybe made their mascot available to you.
Oh, the two mascots were there.
And, oh, they were?
Yeah, Moonchester and Moonbeam.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering if you got any comment from them.
No. One of them patted me on the back because I had this scowl on whenever they came close to me. And one of them patted me.
Why?
Yeah, and I just didn't. I Moonchester. I mean. Anyway, let's just move on. That's just one of those things that leaves me cold. It's forced fun. Why?
So you don't prefer Moonchester and Moonbeam to Gunnar Saris?
They are both equal glimpses of just the nonsense that came in midway through the Premier League. Oh, we have to have mascots now. Why?
Yeah.
Why? But there we go. Moving on to, I suppose, something much more serious. This was something that's dominated the news cycle for the last few days, partly because it's huge news and also partly because right now people are looking for stories in football to focus on outside of meaningless preseason friendlies. And that is Mesut Ozil effectively retiring from the German national team. It happened over the weekend. It was typically a social media post on Twitter, but not a typical one in the sense that he went into some detail, almost 3,000 words of detail, which most people, I'm sure most of our listeners, are well familiar with right now. And I was just, I won't say I didn't see it coming. I mean, it doesn't shock me hugely, but the shocking part is that this is a 29-year-old who, I mean, he's been such an integral part of this German story since that team kind of burst onto the scene in the 2010 World Cup. And it's all I can say is, Andrew, I'm really sad about it. I'm really dying to hear what you have to say.
Well, I do kind of actually find myself feeling for him. But like for Germany, I think they'll be fine. I mean, he's 29.
But surely that's not the point, though. It's the fact that such a talented footballer feels now that because of things that have gone on and a lack of backing from the Deutscher Fußballbund that he cannot continue. He cannot feel comfortable wearing the jersey, which is just sad.
And that is the sad part, that he feels like he was pushed out of the German national team. I guess this is a really tricky one, but I would say this, the first element of this about Ozil being kind of made into a scapegoat, it's just interesting how that term follows him. Like, he's the scapegoat at Arsenal. Mm. Now he's the scapegoat at Germany. I don't know what it is, if it's just his body language, if it's his face. Like, you know, sometimes there's, you know, in baseball, a guy will strike out and, you know, fans will be mad at him and then he'll smash the bat over his knee or bash it on the side of the dugout and fans feel better because they now know I know he cares and he's mad about what happened. Like, because Ozil doesn't do that, because he always has the same stoic look, maybe fans just cannot connect with him. He's hardly the only player like that. But look, if you want to scapegoat him, okay, that's your prerogative. They were all bad. Like, yes, he was bad. Who wasn't bad? Okay, even Toni Kroos, who had the moment of brilliance against Sweden, it was hardly his best showing. Boateng had the two yellow cards, got sent off. Thomas Muller was invisible.
Right.
Against South Korea in their must-win game, again, I'm not lauding Mesut Ozil, but he did create more chances for Germany than anyone else on the field. So, like, if you want to scapegoat him, then I think it kind of has to be a different reason other than simply his performance. Because against South Korea, he might have been their best player. And even if you want to say he wasn't, well, everyone was bad. So what makes his bad performances stand out over everyone else? Now you get to the complicated part of all of this.
Right.
He entered this tournament in a negative light because of what happened with the Turkish president, Erdogan. And, you know, look, I don't know much about Turkish politics other than what you see on the news. But here's what I'll say about it real quick. This is a really complicated issue. And not only am I not well-versed in Turkish politics, but I'm not incredibly well-versed in Mesut Ozil's own personal politics.
Right.
What I do know is the basics that everyone knows. It's an oppressive, autocratic ruler of Turkey. And I know this. I also know that, do you know who Enes Kanter is, JJ?
Yeah,
center
absolutely.
For the New York Knicks.
Right.
So he's playing basketball in the NBA. He still has family back in Turkey. Enes Kanter decided to take the approach of speaking his mind, sharing his values, and speaking out against the Erdogan regime. So what happened after that? He was named an enemy of the state by Turkey, and his father was put into jail.
Right.
So in many respects, kind of confirming much of what Enes Kanter had to say. Look, I respect, whether you agree or disagree with Enes Kanter, I certainly respect somebody who is willing to put themselves out there and share their beliefs on a controversial issue. And when they see something happening in their homeland that they disagree with, letting it be known that they feel that way. Conversely, I also respect somebody who has no feelings on politics, who feels uncomfortable being thrust into the middle of a political firestorm, who doesn't want to be something that they're not and doesn't want to share beliefs one way or the other. And that may be Mesut Ozil. You know, you saw what just happened. I don't know what kind of family situation he has back in Turkey. But like I just said, Enes Kanter's father was just put into jail for Enes Kanter voicing his beliefs some, 5,000 miles away or whatever the U.S. is from Turkey. You know, maybe Mesut Ozil, maybe he feels a certain way about Erdogan, but maybe he's afraid to say something. Maybe he's afraid to put himself in the middle of this because there's people back home that he may care about that he doesn't want to see anything happen to. So he's taken a different approach of just staying quiet. You know, some people may have an issue with that, but who are we to judge, the behavior of somebody who's afraid of what his actions could then become back in his country? So, look, I don't know. I'm making a lot of assumptions here because I don't necessarily know how he feels one way or another. He may be totally ambivalent and not even understand, what an autocratic ruler is. But I just think people are people are coming down on this guy in such a way that just felt maybe a little bit unfair to me.
Rafa Honigstein of ESPN FC has written a really good piece on this that I would like people to check out. This is my problem, Andrew. The naivety of Ozil is incredible to me. Now, he's at pains in the piece to say that meeting Erdogan was not about politics or elections, but about respecting the highest office of my family's countries. Not meeting with the president would have been disrespecting the roots of my ancestors. Now, he talked about how he has two hearts. And look, I'm speaking from the point of being an immigrant. I understand that. I really do get that. I have two hearts too. I have an American heart and an Irish heart. I spend enough time here to have put down roots and really care for the country. And Ireland will always be home. But I'm not naive. And so even with my small level of notoriety, which is tiny compared to Mesut Ozil, I know the consequences of if an Irish politician of a certain background comes and visits America and I get a photo taken with them. I understand the way the world works. I understand how that may look. For example, Rory McIlroy went golfing with the President of the United States. The firestorm that created back home in Ireland was incredible. And Rory McIlroy's not American. Like, the idea that Mesut Ozil doesn't understand that, aligning or being perceived to align yourself with political figures, especially one as controversial as Erdogan. I mean, does he not know about Hakan Şükür, who's an effective exile? The ex-Turkish international footballer is an effective exile in California from this regime. We always talk about the kind of infantilized bubble that footballers live in. Does he have no idea that these things happen? And I don't want to come down hard on him, but it just doesn't wash with me, that part of it. It's not about politics or elections. I mean, it is. Why did he have to, in respecting his mother, he talks about in the post, how his mother always said, never forget where you come from. And as an immigrant, I've been told that by both my parents, and I kind of understand that notion and that concept, but that's never included feeling compelled to meet political figures in London. I don't quite get it.
Well, here's the only thing that I would say, and I really hope this isn't coming across as me defending Erdogan and his policies in Turkey, because that's not what I'm meaning. I'm just trying to get into the head of a guy who may just, like you say, be a naive professional athlete, which he is hardly the only one. He talks about home being carrying a special meaning for him, Turkey as a country. If he's invited to a meeting with this president and you see the way that this president conducts himself.
Yeah. There's a fear
factor. And Ozil rejects that meeting. Maybe that's all it takes for him to now also become an enemy of the state. Oh, you don't want to meet with
right.
me? Well, maybe you don't meet with anybody back in Turkey anymore. And now you're in exile. Maybe he doesn't want that. Maybe he just thought in his mind, look, it's only a photo. You're right. Naive. Naive is you absolutely nailed it when you use that word. It's only a photo. Let me take this picture. I don't want to become, you know, the next Enes Kanter or Hakan Şükür. I want to be able to go home again. I love Turkey. There's people there. Let me take this picture. It's only a picture. I'm not coming out and defending his policies. But you're right. He's naive. If that was his thought process, it's incredibly naive because a picture speaks a thousand words. And so ultimately that is his fault in this. But it doesn't necessarily, you know, people are making a leap, I feel, in now branding Mesut Ozil as a certain type of person or looking at him in a certain type of way because of this. He just may not want to get involved. And right now we happen to be in a sports climate and a cultural climate where we kind of, you know, between Colin Kaepernick and, you know, things that LeBron James has said, like we've kind of grown almost accustomed to our professional athletes now also becoming cultural figures. And having a voice on social commentary. And so when we see someone who's maybe not into that, it's now become a little bit jarring the other way. But I certainly see why people would be annoyed with him, but I think people maybe need to step back and look at it from his perspective.
Well, I think so too, and I agree with that sentiment. And in particular, the fact that the DFB have not really shown him the support. Here's Rafa Honigstein talking to ESPN FC. To our Dan Thomas, actually, about this issue. And I think this really gets to the crux of why I believe that Ozil was right to do what he did.
You can say Mesut Ozil wasn't good enough for the last 2 years. You can believe that he was rubbish. I don't tend to agree with this. Most, I think, people who watch football closely wouldn't. But a total misunderstanding or ignorance of the other issues that were raised and of the real lack of protection, I think, that he felt from the German FA, even if you leave away the fact whether the German FA themselves behaved badly or wrongly towards him, the fact that they did not protect him against what is evidentially very racist abuse that he has received from all sorts of sides, that in itself, I think, makes his position very, very difficult. If your superior, even though he's not an employee, does not protect you against these type of abuses, then you're feeling you're being left by yourself. And the fact that neither Hoeneß nor Matthäus really understand that just shows you just how difficult, I think, Germany in 2018 still finds it to get into the mindset of somebody who's a little bit different and somebody who has that difference shoved back into their face when things don't go according to plan. That is a real lack of understanding, unfortunately, and it illustrates the problem. I don't want to say beautifully, because that's the wrong word, but it illustrates the problem very clearly.
Uli Hoeneß's comment was, to completely miss the point, he told Sports Builder, Ozil has been playing for years. He won his last tackle before the 2014 World Cup. All he is doing on the field is playing cross passes. Now he hides himself and his crap performance behind this photo. Now that's just to completely negate the abuse that he, like, there's no denying that the right wing German media and the right wing German politicians have gone after Ozil to further their own political gains. There's no question about that. And for Uli Hoeneß to speak like that is just to completely ignore the issue and the main reason behind Ozil effectively retiring.
Yeah, and the last thing that I have on this is, like, Uli Hoeneß just kind of slides in there. He made his last tackle back before the 2014 World Cup. I feel like that is also getting forgotten here. He was a key figure of a team that won a World Cup for Germany. Like, that almost adds another element of sadness to this. Like, he should be a hero in that country, but it just feels like people are just ready to pounce on this guy. Like I said, both for his club, and now we're seeing both for his country as well. I mean, he started every game for Germany, I believe, back in Brazil 14. So, you know, he was a key figure of that squad, and it just feels like it's gone forgotten so quickly. I'm not saying that he should be able to rest on his laurels from that, you know, from that World Cup for the rest of his international career, but I don't know. To a certain extent, you would think those guys would kind of be immortalized in some ways, but no, certainly not with him.
Well, look, even in a bad team, let's talk about the most recent World Cup. And I have one more comment to make after this, because it's kind of makes me sad and it's depressing. And 5.5, Mesut Ozil created more chances per 90 minutes than any other player at the 2018 World Cup. minimum 90 minutes played in a bad team, in a team that went out of the group stage. That's from Mop to Joe. And I'm just thinking of the fallout for the future. Again, I'm looking at it through an immigrant's eyes. Peter Ahrens from the German magazine Der Spiegel put it like this. A signal that will also register with academy players from migrant families. Do the DFB really want us to play for Germany? Whether talented players in the future will choose Germany without hesitation will probably be discussed differently after the experience in how the Ozil case was dealt with. And I think that's the big thing for Grindel. Grindel himself was a politician with the right, with the, I suppose they'd be centre-right party, the CDU. And, I mean, that's where Ozil directs most of his ire at. He talks about Grindel and not getting that backup, not getting that support. And that's the, I mean, that could be the real legacy of this, Andrew, is that players in a similar position from a similar background don't feel, that they'll have the backing of their association when they go to play for Germany. So a few other stories of note in this kind of quiet period. We're going to the greatest league in the world, Andrew. That's right.
Oh, God. We're going the championship, of course, well, if you're saying this.
Well, hang on for a second now. Think about it this way. We have Bielsa at Leeds United, manager. We have Frank Lampard at Derby County, manager. Could we be adding to this stellar field Thierry Henry at Aston Villa?
Yes, it seems like we can. I really only have one thought on this, and I'm curious where you fall. I actually think that the way this has been handled by Aston Villa has been pretty disgusting.
Yep.
Allowing Steve Bruce, who, you know, not only did he just bring Aston Villa to the brink of getting back into the Premier League and having lost the final to Fulham, you know, he completely he turned the culture around 180 degrees. Like, that place was toxic. And through various moves that he made and through his own managerial style, you know, we spoke a lot at the end of last season about how the feelings around Aston Villa had completely changed. Say what you want about Steve Bruce. He bounces around, you know, he's an average manager or whatever, but, you know, he has done a lot in a short period of time, from inheriting a club that was a train wreck to getting them back into the position that they're currently in. So let's start with that as sort of the baseline here. Now, this guy who's done all that for Villa, he wakes up and he's reading the paper, and he said, by his own admittance, he basically spit his coffee out when he was reading that Thierry Henry had essentially agreed to terms to take his job. What are they doing?
Well,
they're allowing this guy to just dangle in the wind while they've basically brought in his replacement. He has not been sacked yet. He's meeting with the board, right, and they're going to determine his fate, but his fate is sealed. Henry is going to manage this team, and they've completely embarrassed this guy, and it just feels like this was handled so horribly by them.
Now, I know they're new investors or new ownership, however, whatever way you want to phrase them, but this is just so tone deaf. And it's also, I think, a lack of understanding, because you say he bounced around. Say what you will, he does have good knowledge of the championship, and it is a tough league. I don't say this because I have, you know, this kind of love affair with it. I say it because it's true. It's a difficult league, and you can't look. I know there was some contracts that were probably not very well thought through. For example, bringing in John Terry on the wages he was on last season for the championship wasn't a great idea. But, you know, that was Steve Bruce playing with the hand he was dealt. I mean, Tony Gia, the owner, never said no. Now, we've since discovered that he was pumping money monthly in to the club just to keep this thing rolling. But it just seems a little bit kind of trying to put your stamp on a club really, really quickly. And let's not forget that being assistant manager at an international level is nothing compared to the day-to-day management of a club team as big as Aston Villa. I'm with you on this one, Andrew. I'm not so sure this is a great idea.
No. And, like, I also don't understand who's leaking this. I mean, is it Thierry Henry's people who are leaking this information?
Like, well,
it just makes Steve Bruce look so bad. And I just don't understand Villa's desire to allow that to happen.
Right. But don't forget that we don't know what's going on in terms of front office management and who remains from the old regime at Villa. And so, don't forget, Thierry Henry's just finished with Sky literally about a week ago. So
Yeah. Maybe
the new owners, before they confirmed their investment into Aston Villa, tapped him up and said, look, we'd like to bring you along. But I don't know. I,
look,
I don't, I don't like the way this has been dealt with whatsoever.
I'm not saying that Thierry Henry isn't necessarily qualified to manage. I mean, he was an assistant manager under Roberto Martinez for what turned out to be a really successful Belgian side. And he's obviously a brilliant football mind. But it, I don't know, in reading the way this has all played out, it just feels a little bit to me like the new owners of Aston Villa are going star hunting. And they just want that. They want to be, you know, a part of a huge name like Henry. Whether or not there's substance there as a manager remains to be seen.
Yeah, but they've got to realize that first and foremost, Aston Villa have to be challenging to get out of the championship. And the question you got to ask yourself, are you not better sticking with the man who took you to the championship playoff final last season, changed around a toxic dressing room? I don't know. Maybe sometimes it's just better to go with what you know. And you know, if you wanted to somehow... I was going to say bring in Thierry Henry as an assistant. That just won't work. He's too big of a star. I think it's a mistake. Speaking of transfer talk, I caught up with Mark Ogden of ESPN FC and we had a little look, Andrew, a kind of a rapid fire condensed look at the top six in the transfer window so far. So let's have a listen.
Mark Ogden, ESPN FC on a kind of a wet Manchester Monday here in New York. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Yeah, it's drying off a little bit now because I've been caught in a downpour with Leroy Sané, but yeah, never mind.
What's his mood like? Obviously, you spoke to him there. Probably happy to be back playing football, considering the summer he's had.
Yeah, he seemed quite upbeat. You know, he missed out on the Germany squad, but it probably wasn't the worst Germany World Cup squad to miss out on, was it? Because he went back home as kind of villains, really, having missed out on the knockout stage. So he was fairly philosophical about it. So, I think he's looking forward to the season.
We're at that point in the season now, the pre-season, where we can make some kind of assessments on how the top six have done so far. If you were giving out a scorecard or a grading paper, who's made the best move so far?
Well, I think Liverpool have done pretty well. They've, you know, obviously Naby Keita was coming anyway. Alisson, the goalkeeper, has improved the situation that's been a problem for a while. San Fabinho, so I think they've made good signings. They kept Salah, they kept Firmino. So for me, they've done better business than anybody because City have just added Mahrez, United have added Red and Diogo Dalot and a reserve keeper. So nobody's really kind of made a big statement signing yet, but there's only 2.5 weeks of the window to go, so they're running out of time.
Who would you be worried about
in terms of not making enough investment? Well, so the one club I should have mentioned that have done really well, I think, are Arsenal. I think they've signed, you know, Unai Emery's come in and he's signed 4 or 5 experienced, hardened players. Papastopoulos, you know, good signing. Leno, good signing. Lichtstein, a good signing. It just gives Arsenal what they've not had for a long time, that kind of nous and experience. I think they'll make a real push for top four this year, maybe even higher than that. Who should I worry about? I think Tottenham again haven't signed anybody. Chelsea, I worry about Chelsea. They've signed Jorginho, but I just think that the manager came in so late, he's going to find it hard to impose his methods, and maybe kind of getting a bit carried away. But Chelsea have had some hot and cold guys. You know, Scolari was a disaster, Villas Boas was a disaster, and Sarri could be a spectacular success or a disaster. So I think we wait and see, but I definitely worry about Chelsea and even United to a certain extent, because I just think, you know, they desperately need a number 10, an Eden Hazard or a David Silva or a Coutinho, and they haven't got that.
We had a chat earlier, the general mood, if you're looking at your manager as a totem of positivity or someone who's going to set the mood, it's not good at United.
No, I mean, he's setting the mood, but in a bad way. You know, they say that every team reflects the personality of the manager, so I wouldn't buy a season ticket at Man United this season, because if you're going to have football reflecting Mourinho's mood, it's going to be dismal, isn't it? You know, it's just from day one he's moaned on this tour, moaned about the squad he's got, moaned about the prospect of losing big games. He's moaned about his new captain being injured, saying it was what we should expect, but then why give him the captaincy? He even had a moan at Pogba in a certain way, because he said that he's had a great World Cup, but only he will now know why he's had a great World Cup. As if to say, if he'd listened to me earlier, he would have had it. So, yeah, he's not bringing much joy to the party, is he?
Speaking of joy, pre-season tours is a tiresome time for you, I'm sure. You're going to be... Where are you off to next, actually?
Well, I'm doing this City-Liverpool game in New Jersey, and I'm off to Detroit for the game in Ann Arbor, Liverpool, Man United. So I've got kind of a shortened summer tour this year, like a lot of the players, because I had a long time in the World Cup. But this is usually a really good time of the season, because you've had a month, 6 weeks off, and you're desperate to get back into it. But like I say, Russia's kind of eating into our summers this year quite a bit.
I think so, and it remains in our soul a little bit. It was such a good World Cup. Finally, Mark, Is there anything you have seen in pre-season, anything that you could tell our listeners that look out for someone, anything tasty, or has it been pretty much very hard to tell, as with most pre-seasons?
Yeah, I put my hands away. I mean, I've not seen a lot of it because we only came out on Sunday, so I've not obviously had a switched off for a week after the World Cup. But I mean, the one thing I want to see is Phil Foden at Man City, whether he's going to be given the chance on tour and during the season to live up to the hype. And it is, there's a lot of hype now. You know, he captained England in the 17 World Cup, which they won. He was named the player of the tournament. He's got a lot of people talking up as the saviour of English football. He's only 18. So are we going to see that? Has it been overblown? I just think it'd be good to see him in action. I saw him play against United in Houston last summer, and he did look a good player, but unless he's playing, he's never going to progress. And you look at the players in front of him, Fernandinho, De Bruyne, David Silva, Bernardo Silva, you know, where's he going to play, you know? I don't know. I mean, I'd like to see him play, but I just worry for him a little bit if he doesn't get a loan move or something.
Cheers for Foden. Thanks very much.
Cheers, bye.
That was Mark Ogden talking to me, kind of give us a rapid-fire look at the movement and non-movement of some of the top six teams there, Andrew.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, like you said, we're in this World Cup summer. There just has been such little focus on it, but there has been some big moves. And it's even more interesting because of the timeline now, which I love, in that transfer deadline day is prior to the season beginning, which I think is great, that these stories and, you know, the uncertainty doesn't carry right over into the beginning of the season. Yeah, I would agree. Liverpool, I think, have been good. And I think Arsenal have been good. Obviously, my ears perk up with Tottenham because once again, it's all quiet on the North London front. I don't necessarily want to come down on them right away and just have this like angry, visceral reaction. They took a similar tack last summer and they wound up with Davinson Sanchez, which might have been one of the most important signings made by any team last season. So, you know, let's take a step back. But it just is interesting to me when you remember what Mauricio Pochettino said on the final day of last season, when he basically challenged Daniel Levy to be brave and take risks. And Spurs have done nothing. And you don't even really see them linked with all that much. Now, they've signed some of their own players like Son and Lamella to some long-term contracts. And I guess for Tottenham, that is in some ways progress compared to the Tottenham of old that would just like allow these guys to leave and then be scrambling to fill the gaps. Like Spurs at least have done a good job of making sure to keep their best players in-house. Kane, Eriksen for now. I saw Real Madrid are readying a bid for Hugo Lloris, but we'll see what comes of that. So that is important for them. But if their true ambition is to win the league, then I'll be honest, this is not really good enough. If their ambition is to remain competitive in the Champions League and to be a top four side, then you know, then okay, we can have a conversation about that. But if they want to challenge Manchester City, then this really isn't going to work.
Poor old Spursy Andy.
No, I'm not complaining. I mean, I've said many times that this is, in my life as a Tottenham fan, this is as good as it's gotten. And I've grown an incredible connection to this specific team. I love these players. So it's not some small thing. You know, people will roll their eyes and laugh at, like, you know, it being viewed as a victory that they're keeping their own guys in house. But if you are a Tottenham fan, you know that that's not a small thing for them, because they weren't that club that made things like that happen, that kept these guys with the club. So, you know, that I love this team and I want them to remain together, but you want guys to be challenged for spots, you know, like what Davinson Sanchez has done to Alderweireld. You want to see that competition within the side. And I don't know, look, they're going to do something. But they've been a little late to the party.
To be honest with you, my takeaway from that with Mark is I feel with the shortened window, with coming in so late, Maurizio Sarri is the guy I fear for the most. And I think he is the old Gil of this piece.
Oh, this is bad. This is really bad.
Yeah, that's a major concern for me there. Moving on to, I suppose, pretty big signing for Everton. Marco Silva taking out the playbook of signing a player you've worked with. Richarlison joins Everton.
Yeah, for a pretty big price tag. I remember when he signed with Watford, we were like readying ourselves for our EPL preview, and we were going through the transfers and who we thought was going to be relegated. And you and I were both thinking that Watford were in danger of relegation. And then I remember we saw that and you started just shouting, they signed a Brazilian. Yeah. They've signed a Brazilian. Like, we didn't know anything about him, but like a Brazilian going to play at Watford just was kind of jarring. And sure enough, it wound up to be a great signing for them. Whether or not that's the case for Everton as well, I guess we'll see.
I think he has a lot of upside in terms of age. And like he did well playing in a not great team. So it's going to be interesting to see, how he works out at Everton. João Moutinho joins Wolves, which that should shock people, but funnily enough, it doesn't.
Why? Because of this like influx of Portuguese players that are finding their way to Wolves now?
I feel like we really need to do a piece on how all of a sudden Wolves are signing these players. It's curious, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, the Mullinau is like little Lisbon.
Yeah, it is, and I don't know how this could be happening. How could it be happening, Jorge Mendes?
Oh yeah, but I thought the João Moutinho one was interesting because, like, don't you remember years ago when he was, he's 31 now.
Right.
So when he was like 25, 26, maybe right before he made his move to Monaco, he was coming off a really impressive stint with the Portuguese national team as a young, kind of a young player. And he was on the radar of all kinds of different clubs, like big clubs in England. And now, sure enough, here he is. He does wind up getting to England and living out, I guess, his dream of playing in the Premier League, because he says it's one of his objectives was to always play in England. But he's doing it for Wolves. Like, do you think this is the way, not to say that it's bad or whatever, but do you think this is the way that he kind of charted that one out?
Definitely not. But he's here. But he's here at a really good moment for Wolves anyway. And maybe now, you know, Midlands football, you think about it. If you look at Wolves, they're in the Premier League. They've clearly got some good financial backing behind them. We'll dig into that at some other point. You've got Aston Villa, who could potentially have Thierry Henry. You've got Frank Lampard managing at Derby County. All of a sudden, and Leicester. Look at Leicester in the Premier League with, Premier League champions in recent memory. You know, the Midlands is now sexy, Andrew.
Things are happening.
Yep. Do you want to do a mailbag?
Yeah, I would love nothing more.
CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com. And this is pretty good mail about it, actually. It's very, it's diverse. And I'll put it to you this way. The email we finish with makes me laugh. And I hope it makes you laugh too. Nathan Nazarino gets us kicked off. My name is Nathan. I'm from Arizona. I started listening to your show before the World Cup. And have to say, you guys are by far my favorite podcast. I also listen to Alexi Lalas' State of the Union, One Football Podcast, and others like Total Soccer Show. And every week, I eagerly await yours because it's the best.
They're all good, though. There's room for many soccer podcasts in your life.
No, there is not. Take that, Total Soccer Show. Number one. Number one in Arizona, baby. I loved your coverage overall with the World Cup, from the group previews to the final coverage. Your chemistry is awesome. You make me laugh, and your style blends personal knowledge and bias with tactics and facts beautifully.
Bias.
Now, here's the interesting part. I guess my only issue nowadays with the European season coming up is more of a personal one. To be honest, I have no real team to support. I supported Spain during the World Cup because I like Spanish football, but not necessarily all of La Liga. So basically, we've got a man here in Arizona who wants, as he says himself, any pointers or tips that you guys can give me. Are there any quizzes or ways to find out how to support a team, or should I just binge watch every Premier League morning and pick a team I gradually like? Andrew, you should be able to explain how next week we'll be able to help Nathan in Arizona.
That's right, Nathan in Arizona. Every season heading into the Premier League, we do what we refer to as a Help a Fan program. We will pin to the top of our Twitter page a 10-question document. And based on your answers to those questions, you submit them with us as an iTunes review. You submit your answers, and we will look at them. We will get a sense of your personality, what would fit you best, and we will be more than happy to assign you with a club for you to cheer for, not just this season, but seasons forevermore. So everybody be on the lookout for that, probably maybe a day or so before our next podcast is released, and we'll start getting you guys out there who don't have clubs. We'll start getting your clubs ready for the new season.
Yeah, @CO Soccer Pod is where we're going to pin the questionnaire. You need to get there, and you need to email us.
iTunes review us.
Oh, excuse me, iTunes review us. Sorry, I got it wrong. I've got my own system wrong. Nate Wenner, I love the pod. To say I love the pod is an understatement. Oh, this is just, in fact, this is too nice. This is way too nice. Last guys, last week you guys mentioned once again about all the players who play in Spain having tax problems, and I thought that I could share some insight into this problem because no one seems to know why all these guys are getting in trouble with the tax authorities. My aunt lives in London and worked as an accountant and tried to explain it to me as a man with zero idea how the Spanish tax code works. What I took from the conversation was that basically the players were accepting a salary that was an after-tax figure, but in order to arrive at this number, the clubs were using untaxed money from image rights holders who were not from Spain and putting the money directly into players' accounts without it actually going through the proper channels to get taxed. Now, my aunt had the belief that these players were spending the money without paying the tax unwittingly. However, she did say it was possible for them to have known too, which I would believe there is. And I think the whole point about this is that you've got to be on the ball, and the person doing your taxes, I refuse to believe that Cristiano Ronaldo sits down and does his taxes in the same way that we do, or that he goes to H&R Block. I'm sorry if this doesn't even make sense, but hopefully this is helpful. Thanks and keep up the good work. No, that makes sense, Nate. David Steffen, love the podcast. Count me as one who's been listening since the 2014 World Cup and plans to keep listening through 2022. I just got home from Minnesota United FC's 5-1 thrashing of Bob Bradley's LAFC and was hoping the combination of that, a 3-game winning streak that's gotten them back into the playoff picture, and the emergence of Darwin Quintero might earn the Loons a shout and some analysis on the pod as you all get back into MLS. Keep up the great work, David in Minneapolis. David, we will definitely, when we're back together, sit down and talk a little bit more about MLS. And, Minnesota finally beginning to settle into the league somewhat.
Yeah, well, I'll give him a quick shout for specifically for Darwin Quintero. 6 goals in his last 5 games, 3 straight weeks as a part of MLS's Team of the Week. He's got 9 goals in 16 games this season. Only Zlatan, JJ, has a better scoring rate. Zlatan's got 12 and 15. Which is phenomenal and kind of what we expected. Beyond that, he's got, Quintero's got 6 assists. This is kind of, Minnesota United FC, I think in their first season, they were comfortable. Let's just be a part of this league. They didn't really do anything to make a splash, and it showed. They were terrible. This designated player signing, though, flew under the radar. He's 5'5", this Colombian guy, but he's come in and he's a tremendous playmaker for them. He's been electric. I think it's kind of not reinvigorated the fan base. The fan base is already so passionate, but it's brought some excitement to a team that didn't really have that sort of dynamic playmaking element. So yeah, he's been a joy for them. And I think, they spent, he was something like $1.5 million, $1.6 million. But they're getting what they paid for right now. That's for sure.
William Dickens, I'm going to take this one as a statement because you're not going to enjoy this at all. It's one of your, how would I say, bugbears. Andrew, addressing you specifically.
Uh-huh.
I am an American soccer fan who is having trouble watching, following, and enjoying MLS. I would consider myself a soft Columbus Crew fan, but now with FC Cincinnati surging into the mix, they will become my squad of choice. I simply take huge issue with an MLS relegation system not being in place as it is with, caps lock, every other league that has ever existed ever. It was stressful to have FCC fight into the top league, if you could call the MLS that. I was wondering if you guys could shed some light on the idiotic system and play style that is the MLS and some reasons why relegation isn't in place and what could be done to improve the level of play to a point where MLS teams could compete with the best of South America or even Europe. Anyhow, love the show. Let's go Blues. Hazard is going to stay along with Courtois and Sarri will win us 2 trophies and Spurs will win none. Thanks, Chris Dickens, a Sunday league number line. Chris, it would take far too long to go into the whole pro-relegation argument. If you listen to this podcast, you know I'm in favour of it. I think it makes leagues better. I think it makes soccer competitive, and it's absolutely vital for the development of the game over here. But Andrew will not countenance a debate on this right now, so I guess the best I can say is we will return to this at another point. Is that fair, Andrew?
Yeah, and look, that's the only thing. I don't hate the idea of relegation being a part of American soccer. I think all those things that you just said are true. I understand a new league, a still relatively new league in MLS, and their hesitancy to get involved with it after they've asked a lot of owners to invest a lot. I think they're approaching a place where we can start to talk about it, but I've understood their hesitancy. Yes, it ultimately will help. I mean, it'll make clubs more competitive, and it'll, clubs will challenge to do more. But I get it. I get not wanting to jump in. And I understand a fan of FC Cincinnati hating that. Like, that makes sense to me also. I'm just, honestly, I'm just kind of, I'm over the debate. Like, they're not doing anything right now. There's like, we can debate this forever, but it's just, it's not on the table right now.
Yeah, and we should always remember that whatever happens,
the United States has stadiums.
Yeah, we do. Lots of them.
Okay, this is the weird email that we got. It's not weird. Eddie contacts us, and I'm not giving any more information because he's kind of thrown his mate under the bus a little bit here. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I have a friend who has recently decided to dedicate his life to becoming a professional soccer player. However, he is going to turn 18 years old in December. He's never played for a team, doesn't really have any natural talents, if you ask me, and isn't really physically gifted. He cited one of his inspirations as Carlos Bacca, the Colombian striker whose professional career didn't start until he was 22 years old, and he believes that if he continues to work hard, he'll eventually be at the professional level. I hope the best for him, and I will continue to support him every way I can. But I personally think that there comes a point, given specific factors, that no matter how much drive or energy you put in, you just won't be able to get what you want. Am I wrong for thinking that? Is there a certain age where you should start to play soccer if your dream is to go pro, or any sport for that matter? I would also like to know if it's possible to listen to older episodes of the pod. It seems like the oldest episode I can find is the Copa America 2016 preview, and I've always wanted to listen to the older stuff. Thanks for all of your work, guys. So, it's just so funny that I want to support him any way I can, says our friend Eddie, but at the same time, I'm just going to absolutely trash him.
I think we need to have the friend on the show and, like, talk to him and see, like, why he believes he can become a professional soccer player after really never having played and being 18 years old.
Yeah, and I think,
like, Christian Pulisic is 1 year older than this guy.
And I think he fundamentally misunderstands the Carlos Bacca story. You can turn professional at 22. You can turn professional a little bit later. I mean, you know, we've seen it before in the past, that players can, in their early 20s, certainly in America, they turn professional a little bit later. But you've played soccer before. You don't just decide. It's not like, you know, choosing a college course and then going off to study that. You just can't become 22 and decide, or even 18, and decide, I'm going to be a professional player.
JJ, I've actually been meaning to tell you, I've been reading a lot about politics lately, and I think I'm going to run for president. Will you support me?
I will not. No, I will not. I won't support a celebrity like you running for office. I don't think it's a good idea.
Interesting. Interesting. All right.
Eddie, I don't know what to tell your friend that he really needs to start playing now, and just like my dreams of playing for Manchester City on Monday. It's quite unlikely. I think I've a better chance, and I've essentially got no chance. Also, older episodes. I don't know how to answer that. I think if you go onto our Pod Center page on ESPN, you should be able to access older episodes. But that's interesting that you could only get one from 2016.
That is a pretty long time ago, though. Like, that was 2 years ago. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that either. Maybe we'll look into that and see if there's a page where they list all of them. But I have a feeling if that's the last one that you could find, then the other ones maybe have, like, expired or timed out. I don't know. I don't know how this works.
All right, we bring it down the stretch here.
Red card.
Andrew, have you got a red card?
Yeah, no, I don't have one. I mean, what kind of question is that? Well, like, I wouldn't do my due diligence.
Well, you're on vacation, so I'm not even sure what your, I mean,
no.
Your level of.
my red card, JJ, is to the Jose Mourinho haters. I have been one of you, Jose Mourinho haters, many times before, and I will be one of you many times again, but I am taking a different approach this time around regarding the Manchester United manager's comments regarding Paul Pogba. Here is what he said on ESPN FC, in case you didn't see. Quote, he was asked what they need to do to get the best out of Paul Pogba after having just seen what Pogba was able to do for France. Jose said, I don't think it's about us getting the best out of him. It's about him giving the best he has to give. I think the World Cup is the perfect habitat for a player like him to give their best. Why? Because it's closed for a month where he can only think about football, where he's with his team on the training camp, completely isolated from the external world, where they focus just on football, where the dimensions of the game can only motivate. Here's why I'm commiserating with Jose on this one. Mourinho was crushed last season for playing Pogba in a more deep-lying role, a more defensive role. He was told that didn't suit Pogba's skill set, that it was a waste of his talents. But then we just sat here and watched Pogba do it for France, and not just do it, but be one of the best players in the entire tournament. So I could understand Mourinho seeing that and feeling a sense of frustration over it. It's still not necessarily my preferred choice for Pogba, for both France and for Manchester United. I've said that many times before. To me, it feels like buying a Ferrari and just driving it through school zones. But now we have tangible proof that Pogba can do this job and do it extremely well. So maybe Jose's just trying to find a new method in capturing Pogba's attention. So he's doing it by sending public messages through the media. I don't know. You can think about that one way or another, but I'm sure Jose has tried many other ways of getting through to Pogba. So before you just have kind of the typical Jose fan outrage, I thought it was important to maybe think about this one first rather than just that reflex of getting angry at every single thing Mourinho says. Because I could see where he'd maybe be a little bit frustrated by what he just witnessed over the summer.
Yeah. I think Mark Ogden in his piece took the opposite, saying maybe he should back Paul Pogba. No,
that I saw that. Maybe get that side of it.
Maybe after a season of not backing him, or at least giving him lukewarm approval, and it was a difficult season last season. Maybe it's time to now get behind him. My red card, Andrew, is to myself for my general attitude prior to going to visit with Manchester City. You know what I'm like. It's very tribal, my support for Liverpool, but also as well, you know, the spread of the City Football Group across the world. Prior to visiting Orangeburg, if I was asked what I think about Manchester City, I would have said this.
I think you're evil! Evil!
But now I'm just a complete fanboy who, let's be honest,
I bloody love football.
So it doesn't really matter. That the fact that Pep Guardiola has rejected me.
No way.
I am just a fan of football, ultimately, and I can be swayed so easily. And I'm not saying I'm a fan of Manchester City now, but I really did enjoy my time. And you know how cynical I am. For me to come back with this sense of joy from that little excursion on Monday, that's pretty special.
It is so sad how easily you can be bought, and how someone who like portrays himself as being this strong man who is just bullheaded. It's all just a phony, false front. You are so weak. You have no backbone or spine.
None.
It's unbelievable.
None. That's why I'm terrible. And that's why I am giving myself a red card, because I deserve it, Andrew.
Yeah, you sure do.
Offside's man of the match.
Who's your man of the match, Andrew?
My man of the match is Alphonso Davies. The Canadian international and Vancouver Whitecaps star is set to make a record move to Bayern Munich. The 17-year-old will be making the biggest move in the history of MLS, as Bayern are preparing a $15 million bid that could rise to $20 million with incentives. He's going to stay in MLS for the remainder of the season. He's not technically allowed to make the move until his 18th birthday. But this is not just, you know, because we talked about Chris Richards recently, who made the move from FC Dallas to Bayern Munich, and he's going to play for their under-18s or under-19s. This is not that. I mean, Bayern are investing real money, serious money, in a 17-year-old from MLS. So it's an important move, I think, for the league. Davies, he made his Canadian debut at just 16. Remember, he scored 3 goals in the Gold Cup last summer. This season for Vancouver, he's got 3 goals and 6 assists. And it's, the move is particularly fruitful for Vancouver. Obviously, it sucks for them that they're losing Davies, but because he's a homegrown player, they will keep the transfer fee, as opposed to it being spread out throughout the league, as MLS and their odd rules does.
Right.
The only thing, I guess, what just remains to be seen is exactly how he's going to be deployed by Bayern. Like I said, it's a lot of money, so I don't know where he's going to slot in. But here's what Davies told Yahoo Sports recently. He said, if the opportunity comes, I think as a developing young player, I want to go somewhere where they'll play me in their first team. If a club buys you, you want to play for that club. You don't want to be going on loan here or there. I don't know if he's ready for Bayern's first team. He may want to start preparing himself for a loan, but that's enough. That financial investment is enough of one that I think that this is not just like, let's take a flyer on this kid. Like, they see something, and I believe that they they are factoring him into their future somehow. So very interesting and good for CONCACAF, good for Canada, certainly, and good for Alphonso Davies.
Absolutely. For Canada, it's very much a case of...
Das ist gut!
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's, I suppose, I mean, when I think of Canadian football back in the day, I think of Paul Pescasolido, players like that. This is a significant change, and I wish him the best of luck, but I do get kind of concerned when I hear about starting. He will have to do a lot to get into that team, but you never know, Andrew. Yeah. You never know.
Yep.
My man of the match is...
It's time for Boy Wonder Wild, Christian Pulisic! Oh, that boy really is special!
That's right, Andrew. That boy really is special. Special on and off the field. What he did at the weekend was pretty special. So Pulisic comes off the bench to score twice and effectively win the game for Dortmund versus Liverpool. 3-1 was the score. Here was Christian Pulisic's second goal.
Can Dortmund pinch this here late on? Pulisic might be able to. He has. 2-1 to Dortmund. Christian Pulisic has got them both to the delight of the American fans in Charlotte.
So Pulisic, a hero on the field. And then afterwards, I found out this from USA Today. After the US men's national team star scored a pair of goals in Dortmund's 3-1 win over Liverpool in Charlotte on Sunday, a young fan in a Pulisic jersey made his way onto the field while Pulisic was conducting post-game interviews. According to reporters at Bank of America Stadium, Pulisic intervened as security tried to detain the young fan. In fact, I've seen video of it. It was kind of heavy-handed.
Yeah, I saw it too.
Yeah, it wasn't great. Pulisic instead made sure the fan got an autograph and a selfie. What a guy, Andrew. What a guy.
Yeah, what he doesn't know is that that young boy is now in prison. I hope it was worth it for him.
I'm not encouraging people to go running on the field, but it was nice. Pulisic was about to do an interview, and he just kind of dropped the mic and went over to help, which was pretty cool.
And the funny thing was, when I read the same thing, and you know they said this fan and Pulisic intervened, then I saw the actual selfie, and I was like, and then like, so I saw the kid. I was like, wow, that's just a small kid.
Yeah.
Like, because they're talking about how like security had to intervene and block him from reach. I was like, this is just a little boy. Like, but, it just, I don't know. You're right. Heavy handed. Yes.
But also that kid has to be there with a parent or guardian who has told them, go on, run on the field. Not great.
You don't know that.
Yeah, I don't.
Look at you giving parenting advice like you know. How dare you?
Because, Andrew, I know nothing.
Until you have a child, you do not understand. Okay?
No, you don't. And by the way, speaking of that, Jack on this trip, he's been doing this thing. I think it's a tact that I'm going to start taking with you and just in life in general.
Okay.
So he does this thing now where when he does something that he thinks is wrong, he then absolves himself of any wrongdoing. Like, for example, last night we were at this baseball game, and it was actually really funny. He goes, I poo-pooed. That's okay. Like, he'll just, no matter what he does, like, he'll come over to me, and, like, he's frustrated, and he'll hit me, and then I'll look at him, he goes, oh, that's okay. Like, he's just, like, cleared himself by just saying the words, that's okay. So I think from now on, if I say, you know, if I make some dumb comment, like, you know, if I say, like, Zinedine Zidane is still manager of Real Madrid, and then I remember that, oh, wait, he left, I'll just say, oh, that's okay. Like, we all make mistakes, JJ, it's okay. How do you think that'll work?
You've told me about this, me of all people, who will use that liberally and without any proper reason. I will just start excusing myself all over the place. You have created a monster, my friend.
Like on our next podcast, if we just sit here and just curse and curse and get called into like ESPN's offices and they say like, what were you thinking? This is a Disney-owned company. You can't do that. We should just look at each other and at the same time just say, that's okay, and just walk out. I think that'll work. There's really no comeback for that.
I think that should be a drop for every error and mistake we make in the forthcoming season.
What, I poo-pooed, that's okay?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Andrew, we've come to the end of our podcast, and let's be honest.
Oh, it's crap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But listen, it was a good idea to do it. You know I struggle through these when you're not here. I can't react off your stupid face. I need to see your face so I can really get angry and get into it. But I hope people enjoyed it.
Yeah, I know I did. And really, that's what this is all about, right? As long as you and I are enjoying it, then it's all good.
Yeah. The other side to it is perhaps doing this podcast when you were far away.
That was flawed from the ground up. It wasn't funny, and we'll work on it. And get back to you.
Yeah, but you know what? That's okay.
All right, man. I'll speak to you soon.
Take you later, fun boy.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.